Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
My next guest is, he's got some range, Bill Riley. You can hear him in Salt Lake City on ESPN 700, hosts a midday show there, does some TV there, play-by-play voice of Utah Athletics and Real Salt Lake. He is a Pac-12 expert, you can talk Utah, and he's joining us now. Bill Riley, thank you for joining us. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Good Friday to you, John. How are things?
Things are good. You know, it's the normal sports world stuff. Give me an idea, because I'm always curious about other markets. What is dominating the talk right now in Salt Lake City?
Well, the Jazz are always big. I've always said this. I think Portland and Salt Lake are very similar markets when it comes to sports. NBA dominates, great franchises, Blazers, Jazz. Both have MLS franchises, both have aspirations to get that third if they can. And both states are dominated by, they love their college football, Ducks, Beavs, Cougs, Utes here in the state. And the markets both have a little weirdness to them. Let's not kid ourselves. Utah's got a little cultural weirdness. Portland's got a little weirdness to it, too. So I've always said, I think these are like sister cities now in the West.
I'm looking now at photographs of the construction going on in Utah's home football stadium. Everybody else is worried about filling seats. Utah is adding seats. And I'm saying nationally this is a problem. What's going on with the fan base at Utah that you need more seats?
Well, the stadium's not that big. I mean, it only seats about 45,000. Standing room, you get about 46.5. So it's always been a good-sized stadium. It was perfect. It was probably a little big for the Mountain West, but there's an appetite here for football. Ironically enough, the man that really jump-started the appetite for football here is in the news today. It was Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer resurrected Utah football, made it a national brand for a couple of years, made it cool, and now Kyle Whittingham's built upon it. The stadium's great. It was updated 20-plus years ago for the Olympics. It's an Olympic stadium. 2002 opening and closing games were held there. But there's a demand. I mean, Utah sold out 65, 70 straight games, John. And the other thing they don't have a lot of, though, is premium seating. And so the new South End Zone project is going to increase the stands by about 6,000. And more than half of those 6,000 seats are going to be low seating and premium suite seating. So they're kind of upping their game a little bit. The attendance will pop out at about 51,000, which is not a bad number. I mean, even if you have a down year, you're still going to do pretty well. They're not adding 20 or 25,000 seats, but adding 5 or 6 was probably necessary.
We're talking to Bill Riley, ESPN 700 host of his show there in Salt Lake City, and also the play-by-play voice of Utah Athletics. You've got a tragedy. I mean, I think that really impacted the entire Pac-12, but especially in Utah. Utah running back Ty Jordan passed away. It was an accidental self-inflicted gunshot wound. He was 19. Terrible thing happening. Can you tell me sort of about the fallout after and trying to make sense of something like that?
Well, I mean, obviously the fallout's twofold. A young man lost his life, which is absolutely tragic. And he was a young man that, you know, had such a very bright future, both on and off the field, John. He was one of those guys. I mean, he's 18, 19 years old. He'd only been at Utah for 4 or 5 months, but one of those magnetic guys that everybody in the athletic department and everybody in the dorm, everybody knew him. He had a big old smile, and he was just big, he wasn't big in stature, but he had a huge personality, and everybody loved him that knew him. And then you had the football side of it, which everybody got to see. You know, everybody wondered what would happen when Zach Moss, the school's all-time leading rusher, left. How would they replace him? And this kid comes in as a true freshman, and from day one he was dynamic, and the future was so bright for him that it was just one of those things that there's only so many things you could say. It's a young man who lost his life in a tragic way, and you know, everybody's trying to figure out how to cope with it here, and the athletic department's done such a good job honoring him and setting up a scholarship fund. Heck, Kyle Whittingham and his wife were the first to donate $100,000. There's going to be a Ty Jordan scholarship fund kind of in perpetuity here at the University of Utah. So they're doing great things to honor his memory, but it's just such a tough situation. The year was tough enough already. One of the bright spots of that year was Ty Jordan, and then, you know, the tragedy of Christmas night occurred.
Bill Riley is our guest. Utah's football season, I felt like, was a mixed bag. It didn't, you know, it started with the delays, and then there was a loss to USC, and then I thought Utah really started to find some rhythm. How did Kyle Whittingham feel at the end of the season?
I think he felt exhausted, like everybody else did, but I think he felt really good about what he saw. You know, the defense, they had to replace 9 starters, John. They were all went on to play in the NFL this year. And they had, you know, 9 guys drafted, 12 guys in free agency, and there was a lot of questions about that. But the one thing we should have learned over the years is you never really have to worry about the Kyle Whittingham defense, because he always finds a way, and they were really, really good. Where they struggled a little bit, really, more than anything else, was on offense. They lost their starting quarterback in the first quarter of the first game against USC. It was the Texas transfer, Cam Rising, who beat out Jake Bentley, the South Carolina transfer, and been in the program a couple of years, tore his labrum diving for a loose ball in the first quarter. And so the guy that won the job in fall camp is out, and the guy that didn't expect to play comes in, and it was just kind of rough sledding a little bit, and they kind of turned the ball over a little bit, and they lost to SC, and they blew that 21. They looked great for the first half up at UW, and then they didn't score in the second half. The offense kind of went away. And then after that, they found their footing. They won 3 straight games to end the season and put up a bunch of points. And so while I think they were glad they got the games in and they were probably relieved after the stress of the season that it was over, I think Kyle Whittingham, and I've talked to him a couple of times, John, since the season ended, he and his staff were really pleased. I think they thought they had a lot of talent, and they've recruited really well the last couple of years. But this 5-game sample size, whether you want to call it a glorified exhibition season or whatever you want to call it, it kind of gave them a sneak preview of what's coming back. And then on top of it, everybody's coming back to this team. Now they've got to fill right that Ty Jordan spot, that's certainly. But they got a couple. They got an Oklahoma and an LSU transfer running back. They got Baylor's second all-time leading passer who transferred in, and Rising coming back at quarterback. But besides that, John, they're gonna bring back 19 of 22 starters next year. That's pretty good.
Yeah, they will, and they're always well coached with Kyle Whittingham there. I'm curious the outside in sort of look that you might be able to provide for Oregon and Oregon State. Let's start with the Ducks. I know that they felt good about winning the Pac-12. I know a lot of people outside of the state felt like, yeah, asterisks on that one, not really a win. What was the sentiment in Salt Lake about the Ducks?
I think people saw them. I think there was some hope to get to maybe see, you know, that first iteration of the replacement schedule, I think, had Utah and Oregon playing. And I think people were kind of excited to see that matchup again after the Pac-12 championship game. But I think here people looked at it and kind of like they've looked at everything. Okay. I don't think it was as big a deal here that Oregon kind of was the, you know, runner up in the North and got to play in the championship game. I think people looked at it and said, you know, Cristobal's really recruited well. That team looks pretty good. But I think kind of the sentiment here was, you know, who really is the best? Maybe Oregon's the best team. Maybe USC is the best team. Maybe Washington's the best team. I don't know that we really even got a sample size just because of the way everything played out. But I think football fans here had a healthy respect for what Mario's been able to do in a short time there. I know I do. You know, he's an impressive and fun guy to talk to at Pac-12 Media Days, and he's done such a good job recruiting. But I think the sentiment here in Salt Lake City was, I don't think the Pac-12 really had a champion this year. I know that, you know, obviously Oregon won it, and they went by the rules and what was there. But kind of the sentiment here was, the Pac-12 really didn't necessarily have a champion this year.
Oregon State, you got a chance to see them. I thought it was a really good game. They were They were coming off of a game in which they had lost their starting quarterback, but I thought they played Utah pretty tough. What do you make of Oregon State? Because I think Beavers fans need to hear that outside-in perspective.
Well, I like Jonathan Smith a lot, and I got close to Dennis Erickson when he was here on staff for a few years, and obviously you know Dennis, and Dennis coached the most successful three-year run they had in recent memory, and he loves Jonathan Smith and told me about him. So I think he's the right guy for the job, and you can see them getting better and better. I just think that program got left in such a spot by Gary Anderson that it's going to take a little bit of time. I think if he gets settled at quarterback, maybe that guy is Jebbia. Maybe it's one of those other guys we saw. What was his name? Chance Nolan?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, the backup who came in and he played really, really hard, but he just looked like a guy that had played a lot. But I think slowly but surely that Jonathan's putting some things together. You know, expectations aren't, I think, the same in Corvallis as they are in Eugene these days. But I think if Jonathan could get a little bit more footing with recruiting there and could get the Beavs to a bowl game, I think he'll be in pretty good shape. And I don't feel like they're that far off, John. I don't. You're closer to it than I am, but I think they play really hard. They don't make a lot of dumb plays. Jabbar Jefferson didn't play in the game here either. So, I mean, Utah really didn't get to see 100% Oregon State. So I like what Jonathan Smith's doing there.
Yeah, I also, you know, and I think, too, it's tough because, it's not like they're trying to win a championship. They're just trying to get to a bowl game. It's a different animal. And I think a lot of times they get judged as, well, that, you know, are they a six-win team? And a lot of outside entities will say, well, who cares? But it's those kinds of teams that make up the core of the Pac-12. And it's Utah and Washington and Oregon and USC that in Arizona State now lately that are playing at the top. Who do you think is going to be really good next year? Give me your championship game prediction. Way too soon. Won't hold you to it.
All right. I'm going to sound a little bit like a homer here, but I really like Utah's chances in the South, the way they rounded into form at the end of the year. I feel this way about USC. They always have talent, but I think the culture there, and I'm a big culture guy, John. Kyle Whittingham has great culture at Utah. You know what the program is. They know who they are. There's not a lot of staff turnover, and people know it. There's a constant. I think Herm's built that a little bit in Tempe. I think Mario's done it in the short time. I think Jimmy Lake's taken over what Chris Peterson built. I think it's there. I have to see USC do it on a consistent basis, and they've lost some talented guys. So I'm going to say Utah in the South, and if Oregon can figure out who their quarterback is, I like them in the North. I wasn't wildly impressed with Dylan Morris this year, but I thought the rest of Washington played really hard for Jimmy Lake. I think those two in the North, but I think if they could figure out who their guy is, I think they've just recruited so well there, and they've got so many dynamic players. If they get that right trigger guy, I think Oregon's the team to beat in the North. So I'll give you a way too early repeat of the last real Pac-12 championship game after a full season, 2019 revisited, Utah and Oregon.
Ruth Watkins, who is the president at the University of Utah, has been part of the Pac-12 CEO group. She announced that after 8 years, she will be moving on to an educational role somewhere else. How does that affect athletics? And was Ruth Watkins a big supporter of athletics?
She was. It's funny you mentioned that. Mark Harlan, Utah's AD, was on with me the other day. It may have been the day you joined me on my show, and she hired him. She's a big supporter of athletics, and she's done a lot in her short 8 years here to help the transition to the Pac-12, to be a real advocate for athletics. She and her husband make all the trips. They're at all the games at home and away and all that stuff. So it's a loss. Ruth's a great woman. President Watkins is. I've had occasion to chat with her a bunch of different times, and she's really, really good. So it's going to be whoever they decide to go with. I know the folks in athletics have their fingers crossed that person is at least is athletics friendly. And you and I had this discussion, John. The Pac-12 needs more presidents who are engaged in athletics. If this conference wants to compete nationally and reestablish itself, and be in the conversation in the football playoff and hiring coaches and Heisman trophies and recruiting and facilities and all that stuff, you can't. Having a good AD and good coaches isn't enough. You have to have that person who's in the ultimate leadership position that's willing to work with you be that person. And I think the Pac-12 needs more of those folks in order to lift up all institutions.
We're talking to Bill Riley, Utah's play-by-play voice. Finally, Bill, let's look at college basketball. It's been messy and clunky and more difficult than I thought to get games in. Bunch of cancellations. What should happen here? What do you think happens with the rest of college basketball's season?
Well, you know, I was anti-bubble until I saw all these cancellations, John, and now I'm kind of wishing some of these conferences had gone. So we'll see what happens. I like the NCAA's approach and plan. I do. I just think, you know, we're going to go through this season a little bit like what we did with college football and just expect some cancellations, conference tournament, and then get the boys to the bubble in Indianapolis.
Bill Riley from Salt Lake City. I appreciate you, Bill. Thanks for joining us. Do a terrific job.
Anytime, John. Take care.
There he is. Grab a podcast if you missed any of that. Look, that CEO group, the presidents and chancellors, I want to focus on them next because the belly aching that you and I do about leadership in the conference, really, if they don't make a move with their commissioner in this next cycle, I don't know what more we can do as fans and media members and people who care about this conference. I'll talk about it as part of the Culligan Water Cooler Report coming up. Every day on the show, we do the Culligan Water Cooler Report. Today, no different.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
Pac-12 Conference CEO Group. 10 of the 12 members were not part of the group that hired Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott. Ruth Watkins, as we just mentioned with our guests in the last segment, was a big supporter of sports at the University of Utah on her way out in April. But I don't think that she will be removed from the decision about Larry Scott's future and the future of this conference, really. You and I can bellyache all we want. Here's the truth. Here's the dirty little secret. We can all bellyache about whether or not we're happy with the Pac-12 and whether or not the commissioner is doing a disservice to the Pac-12 conference. We can do that all day long. We can play that game. But in the end, if you are somebody that really wants change in this conference, the individuals who are in charge of making it, who have the power to make it, are the presidents and chancellors of the 12 universities. They're the CEO group. They're the decision makers. And once upon a time, I don't think those decision makers were that tuned in to what was going on in the sports world. I frankly don't think that the old guard of presidents 10 years ago thought anything more than, hey, look, the football programs are making money. That's good. We don't have to fund them anymore. They can pay for their own electricity. They can, you know, we don't have to subsidize them. Now I think they do view athletics as a moneymaker, as part of their brand. And I'm confident that these CEOs are smarter than the old guard. I'm looking around, taking the temperature in that room for the Pac-12, and I have it right now a 9-3 vote against Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner. Really, it's 9-2-1. Here's how I see it breaking down. And I know he listens to the show, or his people do. But I think he will get nay votes from everybody except for UCLA and Arizona State. I think Stanford will abstain from voting. And I think they'll make a change in March or April. And if that doesn't happen...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.